Hi everyone, welcome to the podcast. This week I am chatting with surface pattern designer Julie Hamilton. I absolutely love following Julie's work over on Instagram, and I've particularly enjoyed seeing her take on the 100 Day Project not once, but four times. In this episode, we chat all about that, and Julie shares some great suggestions for anyone that wants to get started with making daily art. We also talk about how Julie got involved in licensing her artwork, and she shares the ins and outs of how that all works. And it wouldn't be an art podcast if we didn't get into the supplies and the process side of things. Julie chats about how she makes her art, including all the techniques and the materials that she loves to use. You can almost imagine her up in the Whistler Mountains with a cup of coffee, making art every morning. I hope that you enjoy it as much as I did, and that it encourages you to make more art. So enough from me. Let's get into the conversation and hear from Julie. Hi, Julie. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm very good. So it's morning time here, Sunday mornings. I reckon it must be Saturday afternoon, evening for you.
It's early evening. It's pouring rain and I am tucked in my house for the night.
Sounds
good. It's a perfect night.
And I know from our chat before, you have is it a child-free, husband-free weekend this weekend?
I do. My son actually just called and he may come home, but he may not. He's 18 years old now, so he's a little bit on his own program. So we'll see what happens. But so far, so good. It's been a very relaxing weekend. The only thing I have is my dog who's constantly staring at me, wondering when we're going for another walk in the rain.
Oh, okay. You just have to give him lots of pats.
Exactly.
Well, I want to say, first of all, thank you for taking some time out of your weekend to chat with me. I am thrilled that you're coming on the podcast for this episode, and I have been following your work mainly via Instagram for many years now. So I'm really looking forward to, I guess, digging in a bit deeper, because I know your work, but I don't know too much about your, I guess, art journey, story, all those sorts of things.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me here. Would you like me just to start at the beginning?
I think that's always a good place to start. So I know it's a hard question because there's so much that you could answer, but how did you even get started with art?
Well, I am definitely a late bloomer. I was creative all my life. I think you've probably heard that from most people, you know, very early in life, if that's what you enjoy doing. But I probably didn't really fall into it until I was 40. It was a good 10 years ago when I had younger kids. I definitely was doing a little bit more art journaling and sketchbooking, and was definitely bringing my book with me to the playground and spending time while they were out playing. My kids were very independent. And then at around 40, we went traveling. I pulled my kids from school and homeschooled them for a year, and we went traveling in Europe, and I did tons of sketchbooking. And it was from there that I decided that this is how I wanted to focus my life. So I came home. I was a registered massage therapist here in Whistler, and I quit and became a stay-at-home mom and just went from there. So no formal education, just a lot of classes.
Wow. So what led you into, I guess, the painting and the collaging and the work that you do? How did you discover that that was your thing?
Well, Laura, I tried everything. It was funny. I mean, I went from watercolor, then I did oils, and then I fell into acrylic paints just because they're so versatile. So it was actually, I took a lot of courses. So one of the first ones I took was a Flora Boley course, and which I absolutely adored, intuitive painting. And honestly, I found that I didn't have the patience to stick with my paintings and see them through. So I ended up cutting up a lot of my work. So I would cut it up into little pieces. And I was like, that is going to make look at these pieces. I love that little, you know, 2-inch section of this huge painting. So it was kind of, it was a very organic way I fell into it. But I ended up cutting up a lot of my paintings and then started collaging. And because of my illustrative background, then I started illustrating little scenes with those, such as flowers or houses. And then I've just through the past couple of years, I've started to do sort of more I guess you'd say wall art. I mean, I'm still playing around with it to this day.
So when you say your illustrative background, can you tell me a little bit about that?
I guess I just started to brush up. I brushed up on my Adobe programs, my Illustrator and Photoshop. And I was doodling. I was doodling. I was drawing everything in sight. So that was sort of, I guess, where I don't want to say I began. I was sort of doing it all at once. And I had taken the Make It in Design, the surface pattern design courses. And so I was doing a lot of work on my computer and basically scanning my work and then bringing it into Illustrator and then making art. And it was I guess you'd say it was a little bit more illustrative. But that was all hand in hand with my painting and collaging.
Ah, it's so interesting. And this is all self-taught, not formal training, just online classes and things like that.
A lot of online, tons of online course. I love learning. I'm definitely a student at heart.
That's brilliant. And I think it's fantastic when you do a lot of different online courses, because then you get exposure to all sorts of different things and then you can combine them together in a very unique way.
I feel like it has. I just feel like I've, over the past 10 years, I've just been bringing it all together. And, you know, I still am definitely on a path to higher learning here, but it's been interesting. It's been interesting for me to note how they've come together.
Because I've had a similar experience, because I've also done a lot of online classes and I didn't go to art school, and I have taken that approach as well of just experimenting, trying different things and then combining them together. And I'm continuing as well to learn and add new things in. And I think it's just, it's a wonderful way to approach things. And many of the listeners to this podcast have a similar experience.
The more art that you make, and it can be anything from, say, doodling to collaging to painting, the more that you make, the more you discover, and then the more you play, you just find ways to combine them. Like I've just recently been bringing some stitching and sewing into my work, and that, I don't even know where I must have seen it somewhere, and I was like, oh, I think I need to try that. And that's, you know, so now that's really fun to add. And you know, from there, I actually ended up scanning some of my stitching to use in for greeting cards. So just fun little things that pop up.
I'm just thinking, we'll go back to your story a little bit. So you were a massage therapist. You went traveling with your kids, homeschooled them, did a lot of making art, sketchbook work, and then decided to grow that further. So did you give up doing your other job and dive into making it into a business? Or how did that look or feel?
Well, it was, I know, it was really hard. I wasn't a very good stay-at-home mom. I really wasn't. I actually loved to be busy. And my kids were at that age. They were, you know, they were in school every day. My husband was, he travels tons. So he was away a lot. I just had quite a bit of time on my hands. So that's why I jumped in fully to the Make It in Design courses. And I guess I was just making so much art. I wanted to do something with it. Maybe it was a means to justify the end. I just felt that I can do this. Why can't I do this? So I jumped in, and my first step with that was the art licensing. I met up with a Fresh Bunch, which is the art licensing company that I work for. I've been with them for 5 years now. So they were sort of one of my first contacts with that. Then slowly I've just been creating my my online presence, mostly through Instagram. And it's been interesting just to see the people I've connected with there, the work that I've actually received from that.
So let's talk a little bit about the licensing first. And the reason I'd like to do that is because I don't have much experience in licensing. And I've had quite a few questions on the podcast, or from people listening to the podcast, I should say, about what is licensing and how do you go about it. So I'm wondering if you could maybe even just start at the very beginning and explain what licensing is, and then how you actually made that contact, what was the process a little bit.
Okay. Art licensing is you license your artwork to a certain company or manufacturer. They use that artwork. You send your files in. They use that artwork then to put on anything from home decor to paper products to anything that has art, a wall art. It can be anything that has art on it. So with that, they generally either buy you out. So they buy the art outright, which means that they then retain, they own it. And you cannot use any of those elements within within any other pieces. Or you can license it, which means that they sell it and you get a percentage of sales. That's the licensing part.
That's how
part.
It works, yeah.
And then as far as licensing, so as I mentioned, it can go on, you know, anything from greeting cards, wallpaper, you know, textiles is a big one. It can go on absolutely anything. So, you know, I guess in a perfect world, you create a great piece of art and it can be on anything from napkins to a greeting card to a t-shirt to anything. And therefore you can make quite a few fees just from that one piece of art if it's a successful piece. So it's a long process. A lot of the times they will choose your art and you often, it's probably up to 18 months before you receive payback for it because it takes a while to manufacture and to get your product out there. Yeah, it's a long process. And then it's also a long process building up all of your clientele. So usually they say it's about, you know, an 8 to 10 year before you're really seeing great or a nice income.
Mm. And so unless you're really good. So you license most of your work through the Fresh Bunch, is that right?
Yes, I do. I decided to go the route of an agent.
Yeah.
Okay, let's not kid ourselves. I'm just not a great businesswoman. I love making art and I would prefer to make art versus just putting things together and getting it out there. Like, I, you know, Instagram's as much as I can handle. it's hard. So yeah. I just, you know, I connected with them and they, you know, they were also growing at that point. For me, it was I was brand new. So it was a learning experience and they were amazing. They just, you know, have helped me along my way.
So how did you connect with them or find out about them?
Instagram. Actually, I think back then that would have been about 5 or 6 years ago. I believe I was doing a pattern a day. So I was creating a pattern a day. I'm sure it was part of a group. Yeah. I wish I could remember the details of all of that, but it was part of a group and I was posting on Instagram. This was also a little bit, I think just a bit before Instagram was crazy popular. It's very competitive now, but back then, and I think I've met them through there. And so I contacted them and we had the conversation and it just blossomed from there.
It's interesting how you talked about the decision to have an agent and how that enables you to have more time to focus on your art, because that's a similar decision if you're a fine artist and you decide to go with a gallery and they promote your work. It's, again, there are perks to that in the sense that you can focus in on your creation process and not be so involved in the marketing of your work. I know there's a lot of artists now that, including myself, that take a lot of that stuff on for themselves, but it's not without its challenges. And I can really appreciate what you're saying about letting other people handle certain things.
It does take a lot of the stress away from it. I can create a lot of art if I'm just left to my own devices. I used to blog. I used to, you know, put my art out there and, you know, try to reach out to others. But I just wasn't very, that would be the thing I would end up procrastinating on.
Mm. Yeah, because you want to be directing your energy into the things that you enjoy, that you want to do, and also the thing that nobody else can do.
We're all good at something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know there's someone out there who's very good at marketing.
Yeah. I'm starting to learn that lesson. I'm starting to learn that you don't have to do it all, that there are people that can help.
I know, but you're doing such a good job doing it all. You really are.
Well, I'm starting to let go of a few things and it feels good, I have to say. You can't do everything. You've got to find a good balance.
Yeah, I'm a strong believer. I believe you only have so much creativity and that, you know, in the course, say, let's say the course of a day, you know, you may only have like 4 hours or 7 hours. So you have to actually use that time wisely to create, and then you have to have the energy to do the rest of it, the marketing, etc. So it does make it a bit difficult.
So speaking about your day, it sounds like you make a lot of art. Are you creating every day, as in making work?
Yep. Yeah. I create every day.
Wow.
It is. I just find that, okay, well, keep in mind, I live in the mountains in a small ski town. There's exercise. There's my dog. There's not a lot of distractions. So I can be a bit housebound. It snows for 6 months of the year. So I definitely have a time to do that. I'm not a great sleeper, so I do get up super early in the morning, and I definitely spend probably an hour every morning just playing. I guess I call it my morning pages. I don't know if you're familiar with Julia Cameron.
Yes, definitely.
Yes. It's my morning pages. It's my visual language. So I usually just play and make marks and combine colors. And it's just sort of, I guess, my way of art journaling. But that's how I start my day, with a cup of coffee. And it's really lovely. And then from there, I obviously have to go to work.
So what time do you get up in the morning? And what, I'm trying to imagine you up in the mountains with your cup of coffee. So what time do you do this, the morning pages?
I get up at 6:30, probably like 6:30 every morning. And once again, my daughter's off at university, my son's on his own program now, and as I mentioned, my husband does travel tons, so I definitely have that time now, and that's recent, so it's really lovely. I feel very grateful for it.
It sounds gorgeous.
It's nice. It's been a long time coming. And then I try to get outside, and I usually exercise and then bring my dog out. And but I do, my mornings are definitely for creating. My creative energy is best sort of in between the hours of 6 and noon. And that's, yeah, usually it sort of filters out a little bit towards the end of the day. So I try to use that time wisely.
It's a really good idea, isn't it, to recognize when you work your best? Because it makes a huge difference, doesn't it? Like if you're trying to do something in the afternoon where your energy's lagging, it's often just not worthwhile.
I find it really frustrating. And that's the part of the process that I don't love. And yeah, I was watching your vlog the other day and how you were procrastinating with this landscape painting. And I just laughed because I mean, that was yesterday that happened. I was just lollygagging. I just couldn't get it together to just sit down and do something. So I ended up going on the internet and I'm like, oh, I'll watch your vlog. So I had a bit of a laugh when you were procrastinating as well. But
I've definitely learned that there's times of the day when I'm more able to switch it on and do something. And I've been getting up early lately too, and I wonder why it took me this long to to realize that I'm the same as you. I the morning from 6:30, 6 a.m. till lunchtime, is I get twice as much done as what I would do in the afternoon.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you have to determine that. I know a lot of people who are night owls, and I tried so hard to be a night owl. I remember like after dinner, I would set all my art supplies and I would sit down. I'm like, I'm going to be a night owl. I'm going to work from 8 o'clock to 1 o'clock, because I mean, it just, with a family, it's just more conducive, right? Everyone, they go to bed. I couldn't do it. I was just kind of yawning and not really feeling the love. So
in the early days when my kids were younger, I did quite a lot of work in the evenings. And it's only been recently that I've been able to kind of switch it around. And I'm like, and then now I'm like, oh, I'm never going to be a night owl ever again.
I know.
Now my family is getting mad at me because I keep going to bed too early. So I look at my watch, yeah, and it'll be like 8:30 p.m. I'm like, you know what? I think I might just, you know, head to bed now. Just exactly. Like looking at me. And my eldest daughter's 11 and she'll be like, Mom, you can't go to bed before your kids. That's just weird. So
wait till they're teenagers. Mine don't head to bed until 1 o'clock now. Oh, they're up forever.
Well, that's really cool that you managed to get so much creative time in, and you know that you are making the most of that time. I certainly got the sense, I get the sense from looking at Instagram that you are actively creating a lot of work, particularly because I have enjoyed following your 100-day projects.
Mm-hmm.
And you're one of the people that seems to follow it through and have done it multiple times. That's true, isn't it?
It is. I love projects. I think Actually, I think a fresh bunch has recognized that as well. They're like, okay, if we give her a project and tell her what to do, she'll do it. So it's, I love a good project. And there's something about the 100-day project that it just, for me, it's just such a wonderful way to work in series and to constantly have new inspiration at your fingertips. Like every day that I work on it, I'm like, oh, tomorrow I'm going to try that. And oh, why don't I, you know, incorporate that into it? So I just find that, you know, for me, the busier I am and the more creative I am, the more ideas come to me. So the project works very well. Once again, I don't create a, you know, a piece of art every day for 100 days. I work on it every day, but some days I may just make papers. Other days I may cut those papers up. You know, the next day I may just do a little video of that. So it's not, I take a little bit of the stress of it off. I'm just really sharing what I do every day.
Oh, I love that so much. That's such a good way to approach it. I've never really thought about it like that, but just...
Yeah, a finished piece is very, very difficult. I think I can usually do about three pieces a week, but I'm very impressed with the people who create a finished piece. That's always... Well, I've done that. So the first year I did it in 2016, I did it with another Instagrammer, Tracy English, and we did cut paper and collaged an icon of sorts. So it could be anything from, you know, a farm scene to apples to, you know, anything. And we did 100 days of that. And that was wonderful, but it was exhausting. There were some days that I actually did become a night owl and I actually had to work late into the night because it would take a good, you know, it'd take a number of hours. Now, granted, we had a lot of work at the end and both of us, great opportunities came our way because of that project, but that was stressful. And so I do find that that's why I had to break it up. So the following years, I've just sort of taken a casual approach to it. You know, it sometimes takes me 150 days to finish my 100 days, but I do, you know, I am working on it every day.
I like the idea that, you know, you could have a day where you just cut up some papers or something that's just easy and gentle and just keeps the momentum going. So with your 100-day projects, have you chosen a theme each time or how have you kind of set it up?
First year I did it in partnership with another illustrator, Tracy. So that was great. It was fantastic for my first year having just a partner in crime. Like she lived in England, so she was always posting before me. So I'd be like, oh, I better get at it. It was great to have her for support and encouragement. And then the following year, I decided to make it a wee bit easier. And the following year, I did a sketchbook studies. And that was really, it was very limited. There was no limited structure. And really all it was about was just playing with new ideas and new mediums. I tried everything, you know, from alcohol inks to India inks to I pulled out a jelly plate. I worked on cardboard. I think I did. It was just very experimental. It was so much fun. And I learned tons from that. I just found that was a great, you know, work with what you have and sort of see what happens. And I think from there, that I started creating a lot of small art, which was really nice because you could finish a piece in a day. That was a fun project.
What kind of size, when you say small art, what size would that be?
They were like 3 inches by 3 inches. Ah, they were small.
So teeny.
They were so small. And I mean, often I would take a big sheet and I would just, you know, I would just play and then I'd go through with a viewfinder and I'd be like, oh, love that piece. And I think that's actually when I go back to where collage started from, it was probably more so from that 100-day project. But yeah, just little pieces. I love tiny art. There's something really special about it. You can give it to friends. You can pop it in a card and people always love it.
Because collage has become a really big part of your work now, hasn't it?
It is. Yeah. I've definitely my 2018 and definitely this year, 2019, I dedicated both of my 100-day projects to collage. It's definitely it's become my thing. I don't want to say I'm trying to stay true to it. I do love trying all sorts of different things, but I do always come back to that. So I'm sticking with it. I finally decided that it's my style.
Yeah. Well, you've certainly made a lot of art to kind of try out all the different things. So it's cool when you get to that point where you're like, you know what? I really love this. And you know that when you keep coming back, don't you?
It is. Yeah, I think that's how you can just sort of learning how to stay true to yourself is just what really resonates with you, what gets you excited. I mean, that's what I was laughing about yesterday. I was trying to just paint and I didn't want to use any cut paper. I really just wanted to use my paintbrushes and my paints. But as I said, I couldn't find the motivation for it. So then I just started making papers, which you make with paint and with your jelly plate. And I was like, okay, this is what excites me. I love all the different textures and the surprises and the mixing of different materials together or, you know, painting on a brown paper bag. Like just, there's so many different things that you can do.
I adore seeing all your work on Instagram and all the papers and things. It's just so, you almost want to touch it, you know, it's just the textures and the colors and it's so creative the way that you combine everything. It's very inviting actually. It makes you just think, you know what, that looks really fun. I want to try that.
No, I love that. And I love all the people who comment and they're inspired by it. It just makes me really happy. I mean, that is my reason for being on Instagram. If it wasn't for that and for sharing in the community, I mean, you're so generous with all of your creativity but it makes it just a happy place to be. So for Instagram, it's my happy place. I can share it. People are always thankful. You must find that as well.
Yeah, it is so uplifting. And I can just imagine people looking at your feed that maybe haven't done anything creative in a while or painted, or maybe they've just haven't had time for themselves, and just seeing something and going, you know what? I could grab some scissors. I could rip up a paper bag. Isn't it cool to think that people see it and it sparks something that gets their own creative juices flowing? Because that's what I think is really cool about Instagram.
Yes, exactly.
It, you know, invites people to make art that maybe, you know, maybe haven't done so for a while or thought that maybe art wasn't accessible for them in some way. I think it just opens up the doors for anyone to get stuck in. I love seeing your Instagram feed. How long have you been on Instagram for? Did you start that around the time?
I definitely started. I started it when I was probably just after my Make It in Design courses. So let's say 7 or 8 years.
Mm.
Yeah, it's been a while. Okay. It's always been about community for me. It's the people that I've connected with through all of the different courses that I've done. And then just from my 100 day projects. And I do make a point, it is a social media. So if I go on Instagram, I definitely try to comment on other people's work and, you know, if something resonates with me or inspires me or, you know, it's love something. I just think it's important to use it as a social media platform as well as a marketing.
It's a lovely place when you approach it from that angle, I think, when you enjoy just spending a bit of time and because you make some great connections and through Instagram and friendships. It's one of those things that it's fantastic, but then sometimes it can be, I guess it cops a lot of flack too, you know, social media in general. There's a balance to be had with it all, isn't there?
Yes, there's definitely a balance. I have to be honest, I don't really go on Facebook anymore. I really have sort of stuck to Instagram. I find that I just can't concentrate on all of it. So I have chosen that as a platform just because it is visual.
That's a great tip and idea actually, isn't it? To just choose one platform rather than trying to be across everything.
Yes, that's my decision. I don't know if it's the right one, but it definitely does make life a little easier.
How do you manage your Instagram? Like, do you try and be mindful of how much time you're spending on there, or do you do it at the end of the day, maybe when you've got a bit of downtime?
No, it's pretty random. I have to say, like, I don't schedule my posts. I do post early in the morning when I get up, but I probably only post 3 or 4 times a week. Even actually with the 100 day project, I think I was probably only posting 3 or 4 times a week. I think I look at it like at lunchtime maybe, and then maybe towards the end of the day.
Yeah.
Sometimes if I'm, you know, out and about, if I'm in the city and I'm probably on it a little bit more, but yeah, it's funny. I don't really have a rhyme or a reason to it. It just, I don't spend tons of time on it. Yeah. I was very pleased. My iPad tells me exactly how much time I've spent on Instagram. And there's weeks that you know, I definitely have less than 15 minutes a day.
That sounds really healthy.
Instagram has changed a lot as well. You know, there's so many people and they only show you so much. So I, you know, I'll get frustrated if I go on and sometimes they're not really showing me anything I want to see. So then I have to make a point like, okay, I'd like to see this person's work and I'd like to connect with this person. So you, I kind of use it like I go and find the people that I want to connect with or communicate with and have that conversation with them so that they show up in my feed.
Yeah, I find I have to do that as well. I find that I need to seek out the artists that I want to see and make sure, as you say, that you're commenting or liking things or whatever. Otherwise, people that I really love just don't show up and it makes me sad.
I always hate when that happens.
Yeah, and suddenly you're like thinking to yourself, wow, I haven't seen anything from that person for months. And then you go and check over on their feed and they've been posting every couple of days. I'm like, why isn't that in my feed?
Frustrating that way, but you just have to find them.
So you mentioned before that you kind of feel like you've found your thing and you're staying true to it with the collage. So I thought, well, collage elements, but I thought it might be cool. I should stop saying the word cool. I keep saying that. I thought it might be good to dig. You know when you sometimes get stuck on a word and you keep saying it? It happens to me on the podcast sometimes.
I know that feeling well.
What I thought might be good is if we chat a little bit about your work and what you actually use and the materials and things like that, because I know people are very curious and love to know what artists' favorite things are. So can you tell me a little bit about your process of creating a piece and what goes into it?
Okay, well, I definitely collect paper. So that's first and foremost. I work on a mixed media paper, usually a Strathmore, probably about an 80s, like a lower weight, which is what I create all of my painted papers with. From there, I also use a jelly plate. Are you familiar with those?
No, I'm not.
Okay, it's for printing. So you can layer, you can layer one color of print, of paint, and then do you take a print of it, and then you can put some more marks, or you can put another layer of paint and then do another print. So you just get a very, how do I describe it? I guess it just gives your paper a lot of depth, and it's just and you can make marks in it as well that will then come through in the print. I definitely do that. And then I also use a lot of inks. I love inks, like the De La Rowney inks. I just find they're just highly saturated. I love the movement. I love how they look over different papers. Like I have to say, I the brown paper bag, give me a brown paper, old brown paper bag any day. And I just love putting all the different paints on it, the alcohol inks, and just sort of seeing how everything works together. I like to scrump them. Scrumps, is that even a word? Scrumple them up.
Yeah,
scrunch them
scrunch
up.
Scrunch and scrumple.
I think it's called scrunch them up. It's scrunch them up, and so that they look old and worn. And then the one thing I've been doing a lot of, and I sort of fell into this, was I happened to be at the paint store, and they had tons of these little containers of sort of samples, I guess, that people had decided they didn't want to paint their house in. So grabbed all of those and. I have wallpaper books. I've grabbed those. I mean, it's also a collection process as well as a creating process. I mean, when I'm out and about, I just love finding really unique papers. Old bookstores have great paper. Tissue paper is another big one that I absolutely love using because of the transparency.
Sounds very fun to just collect all these papers and make them and add layers to them.
Fun just that tactile quality, right? Just being able to touch it and to play around with them. And there's the beauty about collage is that it's not permanent until you glue it down, right? So you can just move things around everywhere.
So what do you do then once you've got your papers and what happens next?
Usually once I've made my papers, I do tend to sometimes I throw them on the ground sometimes and see what colors mix well together. You'd be surprised. That's a very random thing, but actually you'd be surprised how many times I've made a bunch of papers and I have them on the floor and I'm like, oh wow, look at that. That really goes well with that. So it's a very scientific process. But after that, I usually start from the inside out and I usually just start combining things, like combining paper papers, and I use matte medium, usually golden matte medium, which I love that's my adhesive. And the beauty of that is that you can actually create on top of that. If I decide I want to, say, roll a brayer with some paint on top, that's all good. You can do anything. Mm. You got me into the oil pastels. Are they called oil pastels? The oil, those sticks.
There's oil sticks.
Oh my gosh. You got me on those and I love them. Those are fantastic. So you can do those on top. all sorts of neat things. And then it's a protective layer.
Yeah, no, matte medium is fantastic. I use that every now and then when I do a collage, which isn't very often, but I do sometimes get the urge to get out book papers and things like that. And I probably will now after listening to this having this conversation with you.
Yeah, and so I tend to work from the inside out. So I'll just sort of lay a paper and then I just combine the different papers. I rip a lot of my papers so that they're not straight edged. So I'll have a hard edge and a soft edge. And then I usually tend to go through with a viewfinder. I just make one of those paper viewfinders and I just find areas that interest me. And usually I will cut those areas out and then I continue working on the piece. But I just find for me, sometimes that layering process is easier when you're working on a bigger scale and with a viewfinder. So then you're not getting stuck in the, you're just not getting stuck with your composition. You're just playing and working and adding and then subtracting. Once you do your viewfinder, you can just take away what's not really exciting you.
And that's interesting because you talked about how when you started doing online courses that you began by cutting up paintings and using a viewfinder.
Yeah.
And you continue, you've continued with that process right through.
I have. I love my viewfinder. It makes me very happy. I just find that it's, you know, art's so, I think the way I create art, you're an intuitive artist as well. You just, you know, you kind of put it all out there. And I find the viewfinder, you know, especially with a big white edge, it's like getting a mat. And, you know, when you go over your art with just a mat, you can always find these awesome pieces within the art that you've created that you love. And it just sort of takes away, it's like the calm within the chaos.
Yeah, I often find when I work on bigger paper pieces, I'll think I'm going to create a big paper piece, but the reality is it turns into several small ones because I do the same. I usually get a mat board out and just have a look and see and find smaller pieces that are working better than the actual painting as a whole. So it's super, super handy tool to use a viewfinder and even just getting ideas. Like sometimes I do it with my big paintings and I get a viewfinder out just to get some ideas for future work. So compositional ideas, it's a great exercise in learning about composition, isn't it?
Really is. Like it's amazing just what you can discover. Just like, oh, look at that. My favorite is though, I love discovering these little tiny sections and it's like, how can I make that 48 inches by 40? How can I make that big? Never been able to do that though.
It's so quite hard, isn't it? I find that difficult too, like finding something. I'm like, I'm sure that would look really good, big. But then for some reason I end up overcomplicating it or bringing in other things and then I end up with little paintings within the big painting.
Exactly. And that's where I admire your patience for sticking with it because I just find that's exactly what I find. There's all these little paintings. It's like, how do you combine all of these to tell a story or to... It's always so hard to know what to keep and what to take away.
There is definitely a process of adding, subtracting, letting it breathe, coming back, looking at it. And that's why sometimes I find it's good to go back to smaller work. It's
right.
Yeah, yeah. Because there is that ease that comes with things like working on paper and being able to cut things up and working in a journal and all that. And so I find I need both, but not everyone does. There's other artists that can do the big work all the time, but I like the combo.
I admire the big people who work really big all the time too. And it's always interesting reading and listening to their creative process because they can't even imagine working small because it's almost stifling for them because they just can't get it all out.
It's so fun to look at artists that work on massive scales, isn't it? Huge canvases and massive big like tubs of paint and huge brushes and
so good. I know it's a total dream of mine. I would love to be able to work big. I was laughing though. When was it? It was recently. And I do have lots of big canvases. And of course I was there with my big canvas and my little tube of paint and my little paintbrush and my little scraper. And I'm like, okay, this is your problem right here. If you're going to paint big, you need a house paintbrush and you need like a big scraper. And so I need some new art materials.
Yeah, there's an excuse for you. Go out and upsize for big work. That's one of the things I always say when I'm talking about big painting. I'm like, go get big tools. It's a good place to start.
Yes, you definitely need them.
When I look at your work, I notice that you have got a lot of sort of botanical imagery in there and sort of references to nature. Is that something that you've had the whole way through, or how have you developed that kind of connection to nature in your work?
Well, it was always so when I first started with the sketching and the doodling, it was always flower oriented. It was always towards flowers and botanicals and, you know, cacti. And I love that. I just love their free forms. They're the whimsical nature of them. I just find they're very easy to sketch. If you asked me to draw a person, I wouldn't be able to. There's not a fan. So, yeah, and then I'm waiting for your landscape course so that I can, you know, start getting more into landscapes, because that's something I'm definitely interested in. So that's sort of my next, that's my winter project.
Ah. That's good to know.
No pressure at all.
I'm going to have to stop procrastinating then.
I wish you would. No, but yeah, definitely. I'm definitely inspired by, you know, by my surroundings. I live in the wilderness. I spend a lot of time here, and I spend a lot of time in Hawaii. So, definitely inspired by those two places.
Two incredible locations to be inspired by. Have you always lived up in the mountains, or?
I grew up in a big city in Toronto.
Okay.
And then I grew up in Toronto, and then I moved to Whistler after university. I was 22. So I've been here for 30 years now. I've been here for a long time.
You must get quite a lot of Australians coming to Whistler to work on the ski slopes and all that sort of stuff.
Some of my best friends. And actually, I celebrate Aussie Day every year.
Oh, do you? Yeah. I mean, I've never been to Whistler, but it's a popular place for Australians to go and visit. Yeah.
You would fit right in. A lot. Actually, having lived here over the years, so many of the people, I guess, that I've grown up with have actually spent time in Australia. It's kind of a, you know, our neighbors, our very good friends just moved there. Like tons of people do house exchanges. So it's Australia is kind of like the location. Hawaii and Australia. I think they just stop in Hawaii on the way over to Australia.
That sounds perfect.
And my son's going to New Zealand.
Oh.
So that's his travel plan.
Is he traveling there? Is he going to be there for a while, or?
He's planning to travel. It's his gap year. So he's planning to hit New Zealand and maybe Australia. We'll see. See how much money he has.
So thank you so much, Julie, for coming onto the podcast. I'm really looking forward to sharing this conversation with all the podcast listeners. I know that they're going to enjoy getting to know you better and hearing about your story.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. Thank you very much for having me.
And hopefully I might see you over in my new abstract landscape course if I ever get it finished.
Yes, you definitely will see me. I'm patiently waiting.
Well, you have a lovely night. I guess you're heading into your night now. So enjoy your Saturday evening and the rest of your weekend. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Julie.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you.
What a gorgeous conversation. Julie's love of learning and her passion for making art every day is so infectious. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation, and if you did, you probably know what I'm going to say. Please do share it over on Instagram using an Instagram story and making sure that you tag in Julie. Her handle over on Instagram is Julie Hamilton Creative. Well, that's it for this week. I hope that you'll tune in again next week.